Romans 6, 1 to 11. This is what happened in baptism. We went under the water. We left the old country of sin behind. When we came up out of the water, we entered into the new country of grace, a new life in a new land. That's what baptism into the life of Jesus means. When we are lowered into the water, it's like the burial of Jesus. When we are raised up out of the water, it is like the resurrection of Jesus. Each of us is raised into a light-filled world by our Father, so that we can see when we're going in our where we're going in our new grace sovereign country. Could it be any clearer? Our old way of life was nailed to the cross with Christ, a decisive end to that sin miserable life, no longer captive to sin's demands. What we believe is this: if we get included in Christ's sin conquering death, we also get included in his life-saving resurrection. We know that when Jesus was raised from the dead, it was a signal of the end of death as the end. Never again will death have the last word. When Jesus died, he took sin down with him. But alive, he brings God down to us. This is the word of the Lord, and we thank him for it this morning.
We're going to follow the reading of the scriptures, and you'll see the words on the screen as I lead you through them. So let's read together from Joshua chapter 3 and 4. When the people broke camp to cross the Jordan, the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant went ahead of them. Now the Jordan is in flood all during the harvest. Yet as soon as the priests who carried the ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap a great distance away at a town called Adam in the vicinity of Zarethan. While the water flowing down to the Sea of the Araba, that is the Dead Sea, was completely cut off. So the people crossed over opposite Jericho. The priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stopped in the middle of the Jordan and stood on dry ground while all Israel passed by, until the whole nation had completed the crossing on dry ground. When the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, "Choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe, and tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, from right where the priests are standing, and carry them over with you and put them down at the place where you will stay tonight." So Joshua called together the 12 men he had appointed from the Israelites, one from each tribe, and said to them, "Go over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites, to serve as a sign among you. In the future, when your children ask you, 'What do these stones mean?' tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever." So the Israelites did as Joshua commanded them. They took 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites, as the Lord had told Joshua, and they carried them over with them to their camp where they put them down. Joshua set up the 12 stones that had been in the middle of the Jordan at the spot where the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant had stood. And they are there to this day. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you, Chris. So this morning, I want us to spend a few minutes to think about memories. I don't know what your memory is like. I'm very good at remembering certain things, things I enjoy doing, things I've scheduled for a while. I'm very good at not remembering things that are less exciting to me. You can ask my wife, Tanya, how good I am at remembering anniversaries. Actually, don't do that. That might start an argument for us. But we all have the ability to remember things, some better than others. And I'm going to suggest that the Israelites, who we are reading a bit of an account from, they struggled with memory loss at times. This account, as you may recognize, was the second time that the Israelites had approached the promised land, Canaan, to enter it. The first time, God said, go into the promised land, conquer the people there, push them out the way. This land is the land I'm giving to you. And the Israelites went, ooh, I don't know. They sent some spies in. The feedback was, actually, the enemy looks quite hard. They might beat us. We're a bit worried. And they were suffering from memory loss, amnesia, because they had just come from a period of history where God had delivered them and provided for them in miraculous, supernatural ways, time and time again. We think about the Exodus from Egypt. They were oppressed. They were slaves. It wasn't through their power and ability that they rose up and escaped. No, God intervened through these miraculous plagues, one after the other, until finally they were able to leave. But even then, Pharaoh's chasing them down with his chariots and his armies, and this massive group of people are fleeing towards an ocean, the Red Sea, and they don't know how they're going to escape. And God yet again intervenes miraculously through clouds, masking them from the enemy, through parting the Red Sea, through them being able to pass freely on dry ground, and then bringing the waters back down upon the Egyptians so that they were free to move on. And then we see them struggling through the desert and the wilderness, as you might imagine, to get to the promised land. And again, God delivers for them time and time again food in the desert, water in the desert, his presence constantly there, either in a pillar of cloud over the tabernacle and moving forward, or in flame. There was no reason that they should have forgot that God was with them. There's no reason they should have forgot all the wonderful things that God had done for them. And yet, when they approached the promised land, they're like, they were looking at themselves thinking, we can't do this. We can't go in. And so God says, fair enough. You're not ready. You don't trust me enough. And he sends them back into the wilderness for 40 years, that everybody who is 20 years or older, you know, they're going to die off, apart from the faithful spies of Joshua and Caleb. Everyone else from that generation dies out. And now they've been in the wilderness, and God has continued to provide for them in terms of manna, this food from heaven, in terms of water in the wilderness. And now they're approaching the boundary. They're approaching the river Jordan that is in flood. And now God says, now is the time, Joshua, lead these people into the promised land. And that's the point that our reading starts from. So what is their state of memory this time, this new generation? They weren't around, actually, for the Exodus, apart from those two people who remained faithful. But they would have heard the stories, and they would have continued to see God's provision in the last 40 years. Are they going to go in? Are they going to take that step into the promised land? Well, I really love, let's go back to, I don't know if this is working. Could you go back to the first slide there, please, Candy? Thank you. It says, when the people broke camp to cross the Jordan. So that's the first thing they do. Joshua says, we're going in. God tells us now is the time. And the first thing they do is break camp. Now, they've done this a lot of times. They're nomadic. They're living in tents for a while. They've got the tabernacle. They pick everything up and they move on when God says so. But it's a big deal. It's a big deal to pack up your camp and move it. I don't know how many of you like camping, but I've been camping a number of times with my family, five of us all together, and it's not easy. You know, you've got to bring everything you want, you load it in the car, and this is just taking the essentials we know we need for a few days of camping. These people are packing up their entire lives. And if you look in Numbers We get an idea of how many people we're talking about. Numbers 26:51 says 601,730 men were estimated to have crossed into the promised land at that point. That's just men. So there's probably equivalent number of women and children, and then there's all the animals and livestock and wealth and possessions. And we also read in the Old Testament that just packing up the tabernacle was a huge project. So you don't just break camp on a whim. You're moving well over 1 million people. And what are they moving towards? Well, they're moving towards the Jordan River that we've read about was in flood. Now, I've never been to Israel. I've not experienced or witnessed the Jordan River. But I'm guessing if you're going to cross a river with over 1 million people and all your possessions, you don't want to do it at a time when it's in flood. I imagine that's the absolute worst time to cross a river. You want to do it when it's as low and easy to cross as possible. So they've been told, we're going into the promised land. Break camp. Oh, do we really want to do this? We're heading towards a river that's in flood. We're just going to be stuck on the edge. No. They remember what God has done for them in the past, and they step out in faith. And what's really, really wonderful is we read that the waters didn't part until the toes of the high priests who were leading the way with the ark touched the water. Now, I don't know what was going through their mind at that point. I don't know what will be going through Chris's mind as he approaches this water of unknown temperature. But thinking, we've got all these people behind us, we've packed up everything, we've got the ark, which is a very precious thing to us. It represents God, and we're walking towards this river in flood, which would have been quite frightening. What if the water doesn't part? God's told us just to keep going. They needed faith, and they needed to remember God's past faithfulness. And as we read, they went into the river, and the river parted. It was wonderful. It backed up further upriver, and they were able to cross on dry land. And then the priest stopped in the middle, and they were holding the ark, which was a reminder, as everyone else passed, this million plus people, that it was God who parted the water. It was the ark in the middle. They didn't get the ark through first, and everyone's like, okay, and we're walking through. Is this water just going to power down here at any moment and wash us away? There was this presence of God in the middle, this symbol. And then they all cross safely, and then there's these instructions. Joshua 4, 5 to 7. He says, each of you, one of the 12 tribes, one from each 12 of the 12 tribes should go into the middle, and each should pick up a stone and put it on his shoulder from the middle where the ark was. And you're to take it to the bank and put it down where we're going to set up camp, okay? And they're going to make a pile of rocks. Why? Joshua 4, 7 to 9. These stones are a memorial to the people of Israel forever. A memorial of what? Joshua 4, 5 to 7 tells us, when your children ask, what do these stones mean? Tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. This is a marker, a memorial, a monument to God's past faithfulness. And I love the bit that it says at the end of our reading for Joshua 4, verse 9, and they are there still to this day. Well, I don't know at what point this was written, and I don't know whether they are still there to this day, but I'm sure if you go to Israel, people will claim they are still there. I know that quite often they identify these places. But it is a mark that this was something enduring and lasting to help the people remember what God's faithfulness. And that was really, really important for the Israelites. God knew it because when they'd forgotten before, it had ended badly. And now God knows that they've not got an easy challenge now they're at the promised land. They're coming up against Jericho and all the other nations. They are going to need to remember God's faithfulness. So I've brought my own rock this morning. I don't have it on the screen, unfortunately, but maybe you can get a little sense of it. It's a very dull brown rock with a very sharp edge. Now, this is a genuine memorial that I keep. I don't keep it in anywhere on show or anything, but I keep it at the back of a drawer, and every now and then I find it, and it reminds me of something that God did amazingly for my family and I. I'm just going to share a bit about that. That's Tanya, my wife. And to give you a clue of how long ago this was, that's Arthur, who is now 8. And there he's probably, I don't know, 1 or 2 or something like that. I can't remember. But it was a few years ago when we were in Botswana still. And we hadn't been in Botswana long, so this would have been around 2013. And we really wanted to go camping. That's something you do when you're in Africa, you know, and you're living there. You want to go out in the bush. You want to see the wildlife. You want to do things. But we had Arthur, who was very young. We had Thomas, who wasn't a lot older. And we were anxious. We were anxious about snakes, scorpions, spiders, lions, all these things. When you go out in the bush, especially for adults, you're anxious. But when you take small children, you become extra anxious. But a lot of our friends were going out and doing this all the time with children, and we thought, okay, it's obviously doable. Can't be that dangerous. So we spoke to one of our friends, and they said, well, we're going to a park, a nature reserve in South Africa. Would you like to come with us? We've done it lots of times. We can advise you. We can be there to help you if there's any issues. And we were very grateful, and we went to this nature reserve with them. It was a nature reserve without big predators, so there were no lions or anything, and we could camp in this bush camp and have a good time. And things were going very well on the journey there. But we didn't quite make it to the park until we had a flat tire, which was a bit of a concern for us because we only had one spare tire and we were heading out into the bush. We hadn't even made it to the park yet. Our friends, who had a much bigger 4x4, had raced off in the dust, thinking we'll follow them. And we got stuck. So there I am trying to change the tire on the side of this hot, dusty track. Our friends realized we were taking a while. They came back and helped us, and we got on our way. But from that moment on, I lost my peace. What if we're in the middle of this park? We've got these small children. We have limited amount of water, limited amount of food. There's animals around that can hurt us. We might need to rush out and try and find a doctor or a hospital at any moment. Have we made the right decision? What are we doing here? Ah, but we have our friends with us who have another car. We'll be okay. So we worked up a measure of peace by the time we went to bed that night in our camp. Had a wonderful night. The next day they said, let's go out into the park. Let's drive our cars out. Let's see some of the wonderful wildlife here. So we headed out into the park, and we were going on some very bumpy and rough roads. And the problem is, if you're traveling in convoy and you're trying to see wildlife, if you're in the second car, you tend to see the bottom of a lot of animals. Okay? Because the first car, they get the great view of all the animals, and then they run off. So by the time you get there, most of the animals are disappearing into the bush. So we made the decision at that point, having forgotten completely about the fact we were down to our last tire, we decided to separate. So they went on their way, and we went on a different way. And as I was sat there, and there was Tanya in the front of the car with Arthur, there was Thomas in the back, and another friend who was traveling with us, I suddenly remembered that we had only one tire. And I said, you know what? I hope that we don't get a flat tire. And the moment I said that, and I'm not joking on this, the moment I said that, we heard this really loud hissing noise. And this feeling of dread came upon us all. And we looked outside, and sure enough, we had a flat tire. So we're down to 3 wheels now. I looked at the tire to see what the state of play was with the tire, and I realized it wasn't just a hole, it was a rip because of this rock. It had sliced the whole wall of the tire, so there was no fixing it. So we were stuck. Okay, we've got friends here. So we reached for our mobile phone, and it was that point we realized that we remembered early on that we don't have a phone signal out here in the middle of the bush. So we're now stuck. We're miles from our camp. We have children who we were expecting to take back and feed soon. We have heat of in excess of 40 degrees and a lot of dangerous wildlife around. We were very, very scared, actually, but trying to keep it cool for the children. So we had Arthur in Mummy's arms. We had Thomas sat on the ground playing with Impala Poo, which is kind of like marbles, pinging it around, trying to entertain himself. We were less worried about health and safety at that moment. We were just happy he was happy for a moment. And we are making emergency plans in our head. What can we do? And we prayed. And just as you do in desperation, you try the thing that you've already tried, which didn't work last time, which is the mobile phone. And by a miracle, in the middle of nowhere, where there are no masts, we got a signal. And we were able to talk to our friends, and they came back. And being an experienced camper, he had his tire repair kit. We were able to fix one of the tires and continue. God's faithfulness. Doesn't matter what goes on in my life, I can look back at this and say, God, you are faithful. It's a fun anecdote now. We look back on it because we survived it and it worked out well. But actually, at the time, it was very, very scary for us. Here we are fixing that tire. So why am I sharing this illustration? Why am I talking about memorials this morning? Well, firstly, I would like to encourage us all to have a rock. Not necessarily this rock or a physical rock, but when God is faithful to you, when you've been praying for things, when you're worried about things, and God helps you through it, make a mental or a physical marker, something to memorialize what God has done, because it will help you in the times ahead. It will. God delivered you in the past, and he will do it again. And this morning, as we think of baptism, Jacob and Shelley, this is a marker for you. You're going to share your testimony in a minute, a little bit about what God's done in your life. And we look forward to hearing that. And that is testimony to what God has done for you. And in the image of baptism, we have the image of Christ dying, going down into the water. Christ being resurrected, coming out of the water. And as Paul says, if we are in relationship with God and we're sorry for the wrong things we've done, it's as though we have died with Christ. We have died to our sin because of what Christ has done. As we go into the water also has that image of cleansing us from that sin. And as we rise up, we have new life. There is nothing miraculous about the process of baptism. You're already in that relationship with God. He has you. He is faithful to you. You can always trust him, but maybe like the Israelites, we all need to be reminded of that at times. And we want you to be able to look back on this day. And for others who witnessed it, when you're going through challenging times, say, hey, do you remember? Do you remember that day when you were baptized? Do you remember that testimony you shared? The God who was around then, who was faithful to you then, to that point, he is the God who is faithful to you today. And for others of us who have been baptized, maybe this will bring back some memories that we need at this moment to help us to remember God's faithfulness to us. And if you've not been baptized, but you're in that relationship with God, I would encourage you to take this step. It's a gift from God. It's not a duty or an expectation for the sake of it or a legalism. It's God's gift to us to help us remember his faithfulness, because he knows we all suffer from memory loss at times. So that's what I wanted to share this morning. And in a moment, we're going to hand over to Shelley and Jacob to share a bit about what God has done in their lives.